Let's welcome Ellis Valentine to the program. Good evening, Ellis.
How are you?
We're great. We're still high from this weekend, man. We're just so happy.
It was a very moving time for a lot of us.
What was it like being back?
Just being in Montreal was just wonderful. What was happening with this movement to consider or try to even get Montreal Expo Baseball back in Montreal. It's just energizing being in Montreal alone. And if we can do something to get a team back there, that's going to make it even greater.
How long had it been, Ellis, since you'd been in Montreal?
You know, last time was 02, somewhere around in there. Too long ago.
02, did you go to an Expos game?
Yeah, that time around. No, we didn't that time around. And then the other time was the turn back the clock time. Do you remember those?
I remember that.
Well, it was incredible to see you, Ellis, and for me, the highlight of the weekend was watching you interact with the kids in Dorval and then in St. Leonard at the fanfare. When did you learn how to teach kids like that? When did that become, because it's so obviously a passion for you?
The times throughout Major League Baseball when we would go and spend time at various places, I realized that there was some type of a connection there, and I just kind of continued on when my career was over, using my baseball to celebrityism or whatever to open the door to get in and do some work with kids. And a lot of it is because I kind of enjoyed my own childhood without a lot of direction. I'm not going to say that my parents weren't good parents and the people around me weren't, but I wanted to give the kids something that they can utilize in their life, and I use my life experience to be able to do that.
We're chatting with Ellis Valentine right now on the Kauffman Show. Ellis, there was a really cool part of the gala when Robbie Hart had made a compilation video, and one of the scenes was the Expos celebrating in New York in the clubhouse at Shea after clinching a playoff spot, and there you are in your Mets uniform. Now,
right.
A lot of people don't realize that you were traded in the middle of the 81 season and didn't finish the year with the team, but yet they obviously thought so much of you to have you in the clubhouse, and you were celebrating with them in a different uniform. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, I still felt like Montreal was my team, and even being traded, sending Jeff Reardon to Montreal for myself, I still feel like I had some kind of a hand in it. You know what I mean? It was difficult not being able to be a part of that win, but I still felt very good for the guys, and felt good for the city.
I think, we all echo that. Did you watch, the playoffs that year? Like, do you remember where you were on Blue Monday?
Yes, I was watching, I was actually in Montreal, to be real honest, because I still had to come back there. I still had belongings there. I still had a townhouse there. And I don't know. I kind of had mixed emotions during that time. Going back, it was a little bitterness going back to Montreal and not being – or not feeling like I was a part of what was going on there, but it was kind of difficult. But yeah, that home run was just devastating.
Yeah, it was sort of, it's weird to think of it, but it was kind of the beginning of the end, and it was wonderful to pay tribute to that team this weekend. It was just great to have you guys all here, and for you, I imagine that a lot of those guys you haven't seen in 30 years.
Yeah, man, for sure. Seeing Andre and Warren was special. But, you know, my dear buddy is Larry Parrish. Larry Parrish and I broke in the minor leagues together. And actually, he was probably one of the closest guys on the ball club. It was difficult for a lot of guys back then because Major League Baseball didn't really know how to deal with individuals like myself that was going through struggles, challenges with drugs and growing up. We're going through a lot of that here in Dallas. I live in Texas right now. And our kid, Josh Hamilton, that's here, you know, he's going through a tremendous challenge with his addiction issues and youth. And they have services for him. They have, you know, drug coaches. They have, the team is kind of rallied around it. And, you know, the guy is still able to play and play well. He has these bouts of relapses here and there. But, you know, Major League Baseball has finally gotten better with dealing with that. And, you know, you just don't throw a kid out or push him aside because of these issues. We all have some issues somewhere or somehow, but they're doing much better with it now. It's unfortunate that I didn't get that opportunity.
How long did it take you to clean up after baseball?
About a year. I was ready to kind of change my life. A lot of it had to do with a lot of shame and issues that I was going through when I first got into pro ball. And, you know, the Expos kind of, you know, dealt with a lot of that stuff with me. And, you know, I kind of held a lot of it over my head, and I felt very guilty about it. So what I learned afterwards that the drug use was not really pleasure drug use. It was actually medication to help me kind of cope with things. And I have a tremendous respect for cocaine today. I don't choose to use it anymore. However, I'm truly grateful for it with the information that I had back in the day in my head about life. If I did not have the time where I medicated myself with drugs or the behavior, I probably would have done something very tragic to myself. So I'm kind of grateful for it. Now, what it did to kind of bridge me into the point where I got some help and I started to learn some things about my life and about my person. And then when I learned all that stuff, I kind of took that on and became a counselor to help other people deal with some of this. And I've been doing that now for 25 years. So, you know, I guess I got some lemons and I've been making lemonade ever since.
You see, Montreal, I told you this guy was special. We're in conversation with Ellis Valentine, former Montreal Expos great, and with Anakin Slade and Jay Farrar.
Ellis, did you ever feel that while you were playing here in Montreal, you got a bit of a bum rap, that maybe somebody said something, a reputation, you know, kind of had a little bit of gossip about you that maybe wasn't true while you played here?
I was really kind of... I was just a young kid. I was very naive to a lot of things. I know that I was blessed with a tremendous talent. God had given me a wonderful vehicle to ride in. He just didn't give me a good manual on how to drive it. You know?
Yeah.
You know, so I had a real difficult time managing my talent. And it showed. But I do believe that the Expos really, I guess, mismanaged that talent as well, or that person as well. And you know, you can't blame them. They didn't know any better at the time. You know, there was very, very little they could do. Plus, you know, we still had a huge racial thing going on in professional sports.
Right.
Blacks were just allowed to play the game from Jackie Robinson era. We had very few black coaches in the game. So when the young black players had problems, who did we talk to? We didn't have the ability to sit down in a lobby afterwards and speak to someone that was part of our culture, part of where we've come from, you know, like the white guys did. They had a chance to sit in a bar and talk with coaches about things, and they had a lot of familiar areas in their lives where we just didn't have that. We would just go to our room or go to whatever place that we could go to and try to medicate or handle our issues on our own. And, you know, it was like the blind leading the blind. So we struggled. However, you know, Major League Baseball now has almost just turned their backs on black players. And, you know, you have few black coaches in the game now, but you don't have the players. So there's been this major flip-flop, and I don't know if that was by design, but that's just the way it is. So that's just the reality of it. So it's tough. It's difficult for the black player to kind of find some familiar ground or common conversation that would kind of help them culturally. So we just kind of like just kind of, you know, floundered, you know, like fish out of water.
It's weird, Ellis. It's as if the players who had kind of broken through the first generation after Robinson are the guys that are still in baseball and are still a part of it. And you're right. It's hard to think of. I mean, it's unfortunate. The numbers are lower than ever. And we spoke with Delino DeShields and Marquise Grissom during Black History Month about this. And they just talked about how there's no money to maintain fields in urban areas. And
no.
Baseball's just fallen off the radar for basketball.
Yes, it has. And football. Or track and field. And, you know, nowadays, you know, you look at it this way. Hell, up until President Obama got in office, if you were black, you didn't even consider thinking about becoming a president, okay? The same thing is happening with black players, black kids nowadays. Why in the hell should I think about going into Major League Baseball? There's none of us there. You know, I mean, so it's made this huge turnaround. And I think it's a real slap to what Jackie Robinson meant for the game and what Branch Rickey and all of them did. But what can you do about it? Here's a guy like myself. I think I could teach somebody to throw a freaking ball from outfield. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you might be able to do that.
Huh? Yeah. You know, I'd never get a phone call. And, you know, you see guys nowadays, they feel the ball a little bit behind second base or behind shortstop, and they try to throw it home. And they throw it into the dirt, and I mean, the ball goes 20 feet and dies, and they just don't know how to do that. So, in other words, there's just no place for us, not even on the coaching level, like it should be. I mean, there's got to be something that we can do. And then I look at this project, like the project with Montreal. Hell, you know, Montreal needs to really step up and fight this thing and say we deserve baseball here, no matter what. We fielded a great team, a great product year in and year out. However, guys went through financial issues because, you know, you have the double tax, you know, the U.S. tax and the Canadian tax. So when guys became free agents and they got taxed 50%. Hell, why should I stay in Montreal? You know, when I can go down there. I remember the first time I got a paycheck when I got traded to the Mets. Hell, I thought I'd rob somebody. I got so much money, I was like, you got to be kidding me. Let me I was scared to cash the check, to be real honest.
I don't know if you noticed, Ellis, but at the gala on Saturday night, there were a couple of posters put up by the MVP, and one of them was all of the salaries of the 81 Expos. And
wow.
It was Gary Carter, $232,000, and every other player, $32,500. Now, do you think that might have contributed to the resentment towards Carter on the club?
No, Carter was a jerk. Let me just be real honest with you. I love Gary. Okay, but Gary was difficult. He wasn't doing drugs, but damn it, he probably should have. I love Gary Carter big time. He and I broke into Major League Baseball at the same time. But a lot of people really struggled dealing with Gary, and it was hard for me. And I haven't talked about it. When he passed, I did not know what to feel. Okay, but in terms of Gary as a ball player, Gary was a baseball player, okay? But in terms of Gary as a person, he was quite different. You know, I was quite different in a sense myself, but I was never a jerk to anybody. You follow me?
Oh, we're right with you.
That just wasn't me. I did a lot of damage to myself, and, yeah, I harmed other people, but it wasn't an intent. I did not have an intent to set out to harm someone else. Maybe by my behavior and what I was doing to myself, kind of inadvertently harmed you in some kind of way. Yes, it did affect the team, and they said, But that wasn't my intent. I wasn't doing it purposely to get back at the Expos or back at any of the players. And I remember even during the gala when they talked about me not showing up to the ballpark on certain occasions. Well, those occasions I was either on the disabled list or suspended. So it wasn't like I was on, you know, I was an active list of playing and I didn't come to practice or I didn't come to a game or I just didn't show up. It wasn't those days. When I was on the DL or when I was suspended, hell, I couldn't play. What the hell should I be there for? That was just my understanding. Now, I look back on that, that might not have been the right thing to do. However, that's just the way it was. So they made it out to be like I was just not showing up for games or not showing up for practice or whatever. And I was on the starting lineup and this, that, and the other. That day where Roger said that I was asked to pinch it and go up and pinch it against Roger, by the Blue. I had been suspended for the bump the ump situation in Chicago. I had been suspended for 3 days. And so for 3 days, I didn't show up to the ballpark. Okay, what can I do? Go out there and take batting practice, go in and shower and go sit up in the stands and watch the game. I just didn't do that. So when my suspension was lifted, I showed up to the ballpark, and I dressed, and Dick Williams decided that I wasn't ready to play. He decided that, not me. He did, and he didn't put me in the lineup. So I sat down at the end of the dugout. Now, there was a situation where I was supposed to come, where we were down, and they needed a pinch hitter, and they asked me to go pinch it. I think we were winning, we were losing 2-1. And I went and I hit a 2-run home run and made it 3-2. And I, you know, promptly ran right back into the locker room because I knew I wasn't going out and playing in the field, you know. So I went in the locker room. And so they made a big deal out of it. But they asked me to pitch it. I hit a 2-run home run. We won the ball game. Hey, what can I say?
I hope that, you know, Ellis, that what I took from that story was just that you had the most incredible talent on that team, that they could ask you to. It reminds me of, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but The Simpsons, where the Burns says to Daryl Strawberry, "You go hit a home run, okay, Skip." And I had that feeling from it that you could do whatever you wanted on a baseball diamond. And
I could.
Where did you learn how to throw?
I was a pitcher. I was drafted as a pitcher by the Expos, and I grew up, you know, in Los Angeles, you know, just throwing things, okay? Just put it that way. when I started playing pro ball, the neighbors and my mom wanted to get me into organized sports because I was breaking windows and getting up cars and stuff, you know, throwing things up and down the street. And what happened, I was 7 years old back in the day when I started. You played Little League, and Little League started at age 9. It's not like today where, you know, you start playing T-ball at 4, okay? And back then, you had to be 9 years old. Now, they doctored my birth certificate a little bit, and I ended up playing with a bunch of guys that was 9 years old. So I got better, okay? In other words, it pushed me up. So really, I'm 55 right now, okay? So I'm 57. But,
are we sure?
But anyway, that's how it happened. I used to be a pitcher, and I was drafted as a pitcher first baseman. But the year that I was drafted, the year before I was drafted, I was second in the United States in batting average with a .542 batting average in high school. And the guy that beat me out hit .543, never played pro ball, it was never drafted. He just had one of those lucky years where everything he hit fell in, right?
Oh, wow.
And I was the better ball player with the tools and the talent and so on and so forth. That year after that, I went on to play semi-pro ball, not semi-pro, but Babe Ruth baseball in the summer after my junior year in high school, and I broke my leg. And the next year, I played baseball, but I played first base. I couldn't pitch because I couldn't land on my left leg because I had a pin from my knee to my ankle. And I was drafted by the Expos in the second round because they didn't want to take a chance on me in the first round. So I didn't get the first round draft. I was second round draft. There was a guy named Bobby Goodman that was the first round draft, was a catcher. And Gary Carter was the third round draft. And Gary and I used to get into spats a lot because he thought that he should have been number one draft, and if not number one, he should have been number two. So he wanted to fight me in rookie ball because I was the number two draft and he was number three. That's the kind of stuff I put up with Gary.
you know what I'm saying? Did you guys actually throw down? Or
we threw down once in rookie ball.
Because I know who would I take. In that fight.
Yeah, well, you know, it was kind of wild, but you know, he was just that kind of a spirit, you know what I'm saying? And so we got into it, and you know, so we had our moments. I never hated Gary or anything like that, but Gary had his own way about doing things, and that was the way it was. Great athlete, good ball player, all that old good stuff, but you know, a little special at times.
Who was your best friend on the team?
Well, actually, Jerry White and I were very close. He was the first roommate that I had in pro ball, which down in Sarasota, Florida, when we were in instructional league, he was my first roommate. My first year in rookie ball, I had my own apartment. I was $100 a month down on the beach in Cocoa Beach area, Singer Island. And I had a little one-room efficiency. And, you know, my mom when she first came down, she cried because she walked into my apartment, and it was immaculate. My socks was in the drawer. I had food in the refrigerator. The sink was clean. The bathroom was clean. She had nothing to do. she had a real issue with it. She was very cheerful. My little boy is growing up. And I said, it's just the way you raised me. That's all. But what had happened to me over the course of time, the Expos kind of, you know, there was a lot of, you know, ill negotiations on their part with me, and they hung some things over my head. I never got a chance to get a long-term contract, so I always felt very shameful about who I was and about what I was doing, and I didn't realize that. How I dealt with that, I did some things drug-wise because I felt like, you know, I was never going to get offered a long-term contract, any security. I remember when I could have became a free agent with the Expos in 1976, I believe it was, and they hurried up and signed me to a contract, and I was dealing with them in good faith, them and myself. I didn't have an agent or anything like that. And I asked, they asked me, what would it take to make you really happy and sign the contract and da, da, da. And I was a very naive kid. Growing up, I never worked. I never had a job. I didn't know about bills and payments and house notes and mortgages and all that stuff. I didn't have to worry about that. My mother always told me, she said, you just play baseball and everything's going to be fine. So she kind of helped me with a lot of things. And maybe that's the thing she didn't do right. You know, she was still mom, and she was in my corner, so I trusted that, and I trust that today. But I raised my kids a little bit different now. I raised them to know what's going on financially and within the world around them. And I remember the Expos asking me, what would it take to sign me to a contract, a major league contract? And I was just happy they were talking about a major league contract, okay, because you know, we're talking minor leagues before that and this, that, and the other. And so next thing you know, boom, here I am knocking on the door of playing in the big leagues with the Expos at Jerry Park and da-da-da. They get me in this room and they're talking about contracts. I'm feeling all excited. And they asked me, what would I do? And I said, I'd really love to buy my mom a house. And they said, well, what would it take? And I said, oh, $5,000. What the hell did I know, right?
That's too bad.
You know, I'm serious, man. I'm telling you. And, you know, they signed me to this contract, and they gave me this $5,000 bonus. And, you know, when I found out what happened sometime later, okay, because I was just thinking about how I could help my mom. I remember my mother had bought our home that we were living in for $16,000. That's all I remember, okay? But, you know, they had bought that house like 8 years before. You know, I got into pro ball, okay? So back in the day, that was really big for a black family, okay, out of South Central Los Angeles. So in the expos, they didn't try to educate me on, hey, young kid, look, da, da, da. So they took the opportunity and they locked me into a contract that locked me in for 6 years with the major, with the expos, and before I could become a free agent. And that was the year that Lyman Bostock got an agent, okay, and signed a $1 million contract. And I didn't know this, and a lot of other guys didn't know this, but if we did not sign, we would have been a free agent. We could have negotiated with anybody. At that time, my value was tremendous amongst Major League Baseball. However, they manipulated me. What can I say?
Not alone. A lot of players were taken advantage of, and it's
exactly.
It's unfortunate. And you know, if you look at the union is so strong now, and I think that's one of the reasons is that the players got screwed around so hard for so long that mm-hmm. something had to change. Something had to be done.
Yes, yes. So, you know, everything's relevant when you look back on all of the personal changes I went through and the resentments that I carried. I know about all that stuff now. I know about all those types of personal dynamics and issues now. Back then, I didn't, okay? But when I got out of Major League Baseball, as I said, it took about a year for me to start dealing with my addiction and my person. See, I didn't have a drug problem. I had an Ellis problem. I used drugs to deal with it, okay? And when I found out that I was the issue, I had some of the personal problems, and I needed to work on me. I couldn't work on drugs. Drugs, living live and well, are out in the street right now in Montreal, in Chicago, here in Dallas. Drugs are doing fine, but people are struggling, okay? I had to clean up some things in my life, and since doing that, I've been helping other people do the exact same thing.
Ellis, we've kept you on the phone for a half an hour now, and it's been wonderful. And before we let you go, there's somebody who wants to speak to you. She came up to you at the benefit. Her name is Katie Hines, and Katie is known in Expos lore as the greatest fan in the history of the club. I think
wow.
that you can count on one hand the amount of games that Katie missed in the Olympic Stadium years. And we
no
have her
kidding.
Live on the phone right now, and you're her favorite player, so she wants to say hello.
Hi,
Katie.
Hi, Ellis.
How are you?
I'm actually sitting here in my living room wearing my number 17 uniform top.
Oh, yeah,
I've
got to
get a boyfriend.
After my heart, see? Yeah.
No, it was really wonderful seeing you at the gala. I have to tell you, it was a big thrill. I had a barbecue yesterday with my two nephews, who I've turned into baseball fans, because, as you know, in Montreal, there are a lot of hockey heads, right?
And I
Yeah, which I've battled my whole life, by the way.
Mm.
And I don't want them to become one of them. It's over the top in this town, and I want them to learn the most perfect game on the planet Earth.
Wow, that's very, very good to hear. Yeah, it is a special game. Katie, that's good of you.
I wanted to ask you a question. Do you pay attention to MLB right now? Because, as you know, I'm bitter and twisted because of, you know, what's happened. They took my team away from me.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I'm a complete baseball junkie, I have a hard time. I have a hard time watching an entire game.
It's tough. It's really difficult. I know people in Montreal have got to be very, very angry about what has happened. And I watch from afar. I do watch playoffs and championship games, but just to follow through the season, no, I don't. Actually, the Texas Rangers, I played for them for 4 months, 3 months in the minor leagues and a month in the majors. And they treat me better than any other team that I've ever played for.
Wow.
Okay?
Wow.
I mean, they give me more you know, opportunities to do things. They ask me to participate in activities. They pay me. It's
amazing.
Yeah, but
amazing. Do you watch the game? Do you sit there in the living room, you know, like I am right now in my uniform top? Do you watch the game?
I will watch a player. I'll watch Josh Hamilton bat or something like that. But I sit down and watch a whole game, Katie. I don't do that.
You know what I do? Because I'm so angry at Bud Selig and the suits, I just pay attention to the Canadians in the game. And it's unfortunate because in the last few seasons, two seasons ago, there were 26 Canadian players. Last year, 22. Wow. This year, you know how many? 14.
Wow. 14?
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
well,
but it keeps me a little bit in the game. You know, it keeps my hand in the sport.
Correct. Correct. And I understand. Keep doing that. And don't give up on it. I do believe that Montreal does deserve another ball club. You just stay focused on the game. I still love the game. I have my issues with it. And, you know, I'd love to be more involved with that Montreal Expo baseball project. I talked to a few people while I was there, and I just have a passion for Montreal and the city. And you gotta look at it this way. A lot of the other guys left Montreal by choice. I didn't.
Right.
I was traded.
But
okay,
you know what
I didn't
you did?
Leave. Pardon me?
Jay touched on something. He asked you if you ever were, you know, accused of anything or, you know, having a reputation about, you know, where people didn't really know the real you. Do you know often you were accused of not taking the game seriously?
Mm.
But you know there were some of us, and I'm one of them, who used to like that element about you.
Yeah. Well, wow.
Yeah.
It wasn't that I didn't take it serious. It was that I didn't have to work at it as hard as other guys. And it was translated that I didn't take it serious. I was saying earlier where, you know, when I came out there and I did that pinch hit home run thing, I could just call on my talent when I needed to. Well, it wasn't that simple, but I had that kind of talent that I could just respond to a situation at the drop of a dime, and that was a gift that I was given. But, you know, God gave it to me and God took it away.
Ellis, you know? Valentine, I just want to say goodbye to Katie real fast. Katie,
okay.
I want to thank you so much for calling in. We really appreciate it.
Bye, Ellis. I think I might have hugged you a little too hard when I first met you, but I was just so happy.
Hey, nice talking to you, Katie.
Hope I see you again one time.
Hope so soon, okay?
Bonsoir, les gars.
Thank you, Katie, for the call. And I think that, is Ellis still with us?
Yes, I'm still here.
Wonderful. Ellis, I want to thank you so much for your time and your candor tonight. This was an incredible conversation. And I'll tell you, first of all, I'm so sorry that last week we had to bump you with the Kings winning the Stanley Cup. But having seen you this weekend and having gotten to speak to you for a couple of minutes, I think it made this interview that much better. And I got I appreciate who you are and what you do so much more after meeting you than I ever would have last week.
You know, I got to say something real quick. I got a few seconds. I was in Montreal, and I had, so if you see anything or you hear anything, please, somebody do something about this. A picture of Dawson, myself, and Cromartie was stolen from me at the airport. Out of my luggage. It was an autographed picture of all three of us, and a picture I've had since 1978. So if you see that floating around in Montreal somewhere, you know, do something about it.
We will get that out on Twitter right now, Ellis, and we will spread the word. We'll play a clip, and we'll send an email to all the shows at the station and make sure everybody mentions it.
Awesome. God
Ellis,
bless you. Hey, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much for your time, and hopefully we can do this again sometime.
Anytime, give me a call. We'll work that out.
All the best.
God bless. Bye now.